Let me get the presentation up here too. Oops, that was my mistake. I moved ahead. All right, Tom, if you'd like to begin.
All right, this is a public meeting of the Board of Adjustments on May 10th, 2021. And we'll have, so now we'll have the silent roll call, or I guess everyone answer up whether silent or not.
Yeah, why don't you do the roll call, Tom?
Let's do the roll call. Tom Cross is here, Heather Burgett, Peter Burns.
Here.
Phil Corso, Dan Davey,
here.
Ralph Farrell,
here.
Lynn Hitchin, okay. And with that, let's have a Pledge of Allegiance. A Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge Allegiance to the flag,
of the United States of America, to the Republic, for which it stands,
and
one nation, under God, indivisible. With liberty and justice for all. Okay, item number one on the meeting will be the approval of Board of Adjustment meeting minutes dated March 8th, 2021. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Well, first let's get a motion, Tom. Let's get a motion first.
Oh. I make a motion.
And who is that?
Ralph.
Ralph. Okay, thank you, Ralph.
And a second?
Second.
Heather?
Okay, now you can do a call for approval.
Let's have a roll call vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, it's accepted. Item number two, case number 21-13-BOA. Applicant is Victor Seide, the owner is Karen, and Stacy, you're going to take us through this one, right?
I am. I'm going to briefly, and then the applicant, the applicant will have a chance to also make a presentation, and then we'll take questions and continue on to the public hearing from there. So this is an interesting case. I think all of us agree. I know it hasn't happened in my experience. It sounds like with a lot of the board members, this is a new case for us as well. What we're looking at is an appeal to an interpretation that I made related to non-conforming structures. I won't say too much. I think I was pretty clear in the report. We're all familiar with the home in question, which is off of Stagecoach Pass. It is the Wedding Cake House. Right here, you can see that's the definition of the appeal and the request. In essence, the appellant is looking to rebuild the home in the existing location, as well as rebuild the home based on its existing height and massing requirements. However, they would like to build basically new and build a completely different structure, but allowing for those same design parameters. Looking a little bit closely, so I think you're all familiar with the site. I think what's interesting and important to point out is what makes this home non-conforming is one, its location. As you can see, and we'll look at another slide, that the home is built within the rear yard setback. Obviously today we have those setbacks in place, so that would not be permitted. It is on Black Mountain, so that's an important thing to consider. Looking at the comparison, you can see that the existing footprint compared to the proposed footprint, the architect will probably go into this in a little bit more detail. I mean, the new design is looking to sort of have a different sort of framework, kind of different lines, edge of home. But in essence, he is remaining within that building footprint. He'll probably explain a little bit more some of the smaller areas that may not comply with the existing footprint. But in essence, he's looking to locate the home or a new home in the same location as the existing. What this diagram points out, as you can see, this is something that you wouldn't see in Carefree today based on our current zoning ordinance requirements. The house is three levels, although it steps in some locations, still that overall sort of massing and height would not typically be permitted today in Carefree. So really what the ordinance is trying to hold is the fact that if you lost your home due to an act of God, then you should have the right to rebuild it the way it was, within a substantial sort of conformance to the way that it was. If you would like to build a home new, because let's say this home, the style that you no longer are, you no longer like, or something with the home doesn't work for you, then we say, or my interpretation is, if you want to build something new, that you should build by the new development standards in the zoning ordinance. The town did receive we complied, first of all, with our requirements of, in essence, really just posting the property. When we have an appeal, it goes as an ad into the newspaper, and then we post the property. And we apologize, we probably should have been a little bit more descriptive, but I will say the process still works. We did hear from three neighbors. I think some of them are online today. The report sort of outlines their responses. I think there were some there was one that said it should comply with new or rebuilt the same. Some understood the reasoning of maybe maintaining the location, but complying with current height standards. I think we all agree, as well as with the owners, we support the fact that I know that they want to move into their home and get that kind of cleaned up and moving. Even the neighborhood, you know, there's some nuisance issues with dust and such. And so this isn't trying to waylay that process, but we're trying to be sure that it's legal and permitted as per the town's requirements. Before we go to the public hearing, though, I think that this is the opportunity to have the applicant give his explanation, if that's all right with you, Chairman Cross.
Yes, let's have the applicant present what they were looking at.
Great, wonderful. Nice to meet all of you, and wish we could all be meeting in person, but such is the times. My name is Victor, and I'm an architect, and was asked by Ed and Karen Carmines to help them with this process. Ed Carmines and Karen are both attending as well. So, Stacey, do you mind going to the site plan? Go back a couple.
Not a problem.
If you don't mind. So, we're all familiar with the house. It was an iconic house. It was part of the tapestry of Carefree, part of the history in a way of Carefree. And if we all had our druthers, perhaps it would be built the way it always had been, as if the fire had never happened. But I think there are a number of reasons why that is not necessarily a path that would make sense for the current owners. And various construction professionals, including myself, are recommending some adjustments to the plan, the design, and I think the owners are very receptive of that. In fact, they're encouraging that movement. Now, it's really, I think, a question of what are the rights that the property has and that were granted to it when it was originally permitted and built. And so that's one thing. And the other thing is, what are the values of that the development standards and guidelines of the town of Carefree, what do they propose? And so I'm going to maybe talk about both things. I think that when the house, our position is that when the house was originally designed and built and permitted and enjoyed by the neighborhood, it was done so perhaps in a way that it is not within the current standards set back and massing, but it was something that all the neighbors were familiar with and enjoyed and And I think the intention here is to rebuild the house in a way that is no more imposing upon any neighbors than the previous home would be in terms of its massing and its footprint. And then also critically not imposing upon the desert, not encroaching upon the desert in any additional way. And I think this is a unique circumstance. The lot is like no other, of course. And so that, I think, then dovetails into the second point, which is I'm working on several other projects in the town of Carefree, and I'm very familiar with Mountainside Ordinance. And some of the cardinal rules of that ordinance are to retain intact as much of the natural features as possible. That's the vegetation and the boulders. And this site, very specifically, I think, was built originally to be in harmony with the builder, with the boulders and the vegetation and the topography. And if I were to be kind of a third party removed from the situation, or perhaps a neighbor, I would, I think, abhor the idea that they would have, the owners would have to, in order to build, or perhaps if they were to not want to rebuild and sell in that case, that perhaps a totally different building pad would have to be created. Therefore destroying, I would say, some of the most significant elements of the desert. And then the portion that's within the rear setback would then presumably be revegetated. But of course, we all know that nothing would ever be the same if revegetated. So it was really based on, I think, the interests of preserving the natural features of the property, understanding that the position of the house within the rear setback didn't appear to present any hardship on any of the surrounding neighbors, or at least none that I'm aware of, this application was that this appeal was made. And I think it's really to transfer the original development rights of the property to the new construction. Ed and Karen, I think, fell in love with the property and would hope is the real reason why they're interested in making this their home as opposed to selling it to the highest bidder. Our proposal, we haven't really worked on the design too much. We wanted to get through this process before getting much further, but I think the owner is very committed to keeping the house actually fairly in line with the original structure. So the idea would be at the lower level, the pool would be exactly where it's at, perhaps change the geometry of the handrails or so. They were in the middle of a little remodel, or probably a big remodel at the time that the house was built, was burned. The lower level would be almost completely intact as is, just rebuilt in kind. So that's what's happening down below. The upper level, our sense is to provide a somewhat larger terrace, which would replace the where the previous roof had been. That's where it says on the right portion of this exhibit, proposed main level terrace. And so that would actually reduce the massing slightly. It would, instead of there being a sloped roof, there would be a flat terrace. The upper level, we're looking at possibly building it a little bit further towards the east, but that's actually within, fairly close to the existing envelope and certainly within the main part of the site, not within the building on the setback, excuse me. The kind of cardinal rule that we used in terms of laying out our massing for the new property or the new iteration of this plan would be to either retain the existing footprint or move away from the property line, so that it would, if anything, we were erring on the side of making the home slightly less expansive, if that makes sense. And then, Stacey, do you mind going to the next slide?
No.
And then we can go back and forth, I guess, depending on what kind of questions. But I just wanted to give this exhibit because I think it fairly well helps outline what we're looking to adjust. The lower level would be intact. This is the parapet for the right here. Oh, you can't see my cursor, but there'd be a little parapet on the main floor terrace, and then as it goes in, we would pull the overall height a little lower than it had been existing, so that the tower, which was really quite tall, we would not build that high. We would build really more to the line of the existing or the prior roof, if that makes sense. And you can see how that plays out on the south elevation as well. So we're proposing that overall the original massing and footprint would be grandfathered in, and then as a corollary to that, there's this fact that the house, because it terraces up the hill, the overall height is was I think like 58 feet or so, and which is more than what was shown on the drawing, because the actual height was in excess of what was drawn originally. And that we would hope that by at least pulling the maximum height down a few feet, so it would be slightly more compliant than what had previously been in place. So that's the main presentation, what I would wanted to say. We had a list of the points where, how we translated this to the building code, but, I think in essence, the main idea of the proposed, direction of what the owners are looking to do. Ed, did you want to add anything? I'll turn it back to you.
Okay. So, Tom, if you want to go through Chairman Cross, if you would like to go through the board members, if they have any questions for me or for Victor, we can go ahead and have those conversations.
All right, I'll just stop with alphabetically at the top. Heather, do you have any questions?
I would love some clarification, Chairman, on what I heard at the start of this conversation regarding precedent and anything in our historical records in the town that would have said that we had interpreted the ordinance differently and as relates to item number one or number two, rebuild the structures originally designed or build a new structure that meets all current town development standards. Is there any precedence at all related to that?
Stacy?
Chairman and board member Burgett, no, there's not. At least in my tenure, this hasn't come up before, fortunately. I mean, we don't want to see, tragedy going through the town. I don't believe, I looked through a lot of the appeal requests of the past. I didn't see anything similar to this request. It was interesting in sort of under the umbrella of what we're talking about today. It's about, how we read the ordinance and how I believe the ordinance should be enforced. But also because you are the Board of Adjustment, we're almost sort of wrapping in a potential variance if you all believe that some of the things that that Victor has expressed are have value. No, I haven't seen anything like this. I think the way and the reason I interpreted the ordinance the way that I did is because presumably if something tragic like that happens, we don't want to penalize somebody to have to meet current standards if, they've enjoyed their home in a certain manner. But we do feel that because, for example, and everybody has their opinion if they like this design of this home or if they don't, in essence, the sort of nature of it being multi-tiered like that is just not something that we build in Carefree today. Probably at one time, this was kind of an acceptable sort of way to go, particularly on a mountainside. And at the time, there was probably, ideas of kind of some grandiose type ideas. And so, and I think that's how this house was probably born. But we just look at it differently today. There's just an idea of more streamlined, not having so much of that massing that we see. I do appreciate that, the applicant, the owners and the applicant, they're trying not to go even further. But the idea is if you wanted to build something new today, you should, abide by today's standards. with the caveat that, you know, certain circumstances, like we've seen other variances, you know, through our time together, that, you know, that validates, you know, some relief to a development. So I know that was kind of a long-winded answer, but no, I haven't seen anything like this, and I didn't see anything in our records that was close to it. I've seen other appeals, but not related to something to this in this manner.
So with the one follow-up, and then I have a few other questions, but I'll save them for later because I want others to have an opportunity. But is it true then? I mean, does it seem then, if we were to head down this path, that would we be setting some type of precedent that would be important to recognize in future recommendations and decisions?
Chairman and Board Member Burgett, I believe we could be in that position. I don't know if another house is going to have any kind of issue, and then they're going to come to us and want to do more than what was there originally. But I think there is that potential. And I think, Victor, I think you had wanted to respond maybe to something that Heather had or I had stated.
Yeah, thank you. I think the key differentiator here, or at least the basis for I think the case that we're trying to make, is that we are not we're not asking for more than had previously been provided to the property owner. I think that's the key, is that when the home was approved by the town and built and permitted, that was in a way a right that was granted to the homeowner. And I think the key is that if the house were torn down and the owners wanted to say, okay, we want to rebuild it, but actually we want to do it twice as tall and twice as wide, I think that would absolutely be grounds for refusal. But in this case, I think that we're looking at really the rights of the house that conveyed when the house was originally approved, which I think is a reasonable precedent, because that would mean that if this were to happen in the future, someone would have to honor that similar kind of the precedent that this would set.
And one more follow-up, if I may, Chairman. May I continue with one more follow-up?
Yes.
Okay. Can you give us more of a sense of, or maybe just a better, for me, better historical understanding of, so the owner was doing renovations to a current structure, but because of this terribly, terribly unfortunate fire, now we're headed down a different path? I mean, can you describe that journey a little bit more, please?
Is that for me?
Actually, it's for Mr. City. Have I pronounced your name correctly? I apologize.
You did.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. So the question relates to the rationale behind building in a different way now than previously, than had what had previously been in place. Is that right?
Yes. Could you please?
I mean, I can maybe ask the owner to answer that, but I could say that the price of rebuilding this as it was originally I don't think it would be possible in this today's day and age with the construction costs as it is as they are. But I don't know if that's the basis for making a decision, but I think that that's certainly a consideration. One thing I might also add is that the owners did have some structural analysis done on the remains of the building, and the slabs appear to be in very good condition. The retaining walls also look to be in good condition, and obviously the lower level, well, the pool and some of portions of the lower level are in structurally acceptable condition. So the idea would be that we would be rebuilding according to what structurally would would pass muster, if that makes sense. But Mr. Carmines, would you like to say anything related to the shift in approach?
Will you direct the question to me?
No, to the owners, Tom. Chairman Cross.
Yes. So, you know, we love the house. And we were in the process of renovating. We had less than a month to move in. Time of fire, we were just painting the walls. Everything else was essentially done in the house.
So sorry.
You know, it was a huge shock to us. A little bit on the side, you know, the house turned on February 2nd, and we sold our current home, and it recorded on February 2nd.
Oh.
We found ourselves without a home in a very short period of time. So we're searching and trying to put our life back together. The home was a great home. We tried to honor it in the renovation and tried not to change things. The home mostly is steel and block. And so interior walls couldn't be moved, interior structures. There were just a lot of things that we couldn't do in the renovation that we now have the opportunity to do if given the chance. Really what we want to do is rebuild the house in the same location that it was, in the same mass, a little bit shorter. It will probably be a contemporary home, but we're going to maintain the pool area. We're going to maintain the first floor, the lower floor, and then rebuild the second and third floors. That's our intent.
And thank you for that. As neighbors, we are all... it's hard to imagine how hard this has been for both of you. Thank you for being here to go through this procedurally. And we're all neighbors, so our heart has been broken for you over these months when we all certainly saw the tragedy unfolding.
Well, Peter, do you have anything?
Yes. Let me find me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
So, Stacy, as I understand it, the non-conforming aspects of the original structure were basically the encroachment into the rear yard setback and the exceeding of the height standard, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where is it? Are you looking at 1102? You made two statements in your write-up. One is that rather definitive statements. We quote, rebuild the structure as it originally was designed and constructed, including location, height, and architectural style and details. And then you also said later on, however, the point of the non-conforming requirement is to allow relief for an owner to rebuild his home exactly as it was, so they are not restricted or penalized by current development standards. Is that your interpretation of 1102, or is there something else that you, I mean, those are pretty definitive statements.
Chairman Cross and yes. Member Burns, yes, I mean, that is my interpretation. In essence, it looks at that portion of the zoning ordinance that talks about rebuild and reconstruct. And when I read those kinds of words in my mind, that means to put back what was there, to build again what was there. And the reasoning behind this as well is I think when neighbors understand that they live around, you know, the properties that are in their neighborhood, they understand that, you know, and then, you know, unfortunately, yes, when something like this happens, I think the idea is, well, it's okay if it goes back the way it was, because that nonconformance has kind of been somewhat accepted by the neighborhood per se. But if we start kind of going into allowing variances of that quote reconstruction or rebuild, you know, then we're starting to deal with issues of, you know, if we're doing something new, why is it new and it's still responding to some of these older requirements that are no longer really a carefree value as it's shown in our zoning ordinance? So I think the idea is that, you know, just as the Carmines expressed, it sounds like they were very excited about moving into this house. And unfortunately, the fire did occur. But in my mind is then you should look to rebuild, or so that the neighborhood and that, I believe what you enjoyed, you have that right to enjoy once again. But now we're kind of stepping into a funny territory of, well, there were things about it that I enjoyed, but there's a lot of things I didn't like. And so now we're sort of looking at, you know, something that is unexpected. And then if we're doing something that really is not in the same character and spirit of what was originally there, if we're doing something new, then in my mind, that interpretation then goes to, well, if you're going to do something enough of a change that it doesn't have sort of that substantial kind of feel to the existing structure, then we're building something new. And when you build something new and carefree, you comply with current standards. Okay. And I think Victor would like to respond to that, something I said there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I guess it's a clarification question maybe for you, Stacy. Had that fire not happened and the Carmines wanted to, say, demolish some of the arch windows and replace them with a big slider window, for example, mm-hmm. or take the tile roof off and replace it with a flat roof, would that have been possible within the within their allowed rights as if the fire had not happened, I guess?
Chairman Cross, and to answer the question, that is a good question. I think it, you know, it's not so black and white. I understand the point that you're making.
Right.
But at the same time, no, a lot of times when we see remodels and things like that, we do have to coordinate, you know, truly what is happening and how this is evolving. And while you're right, modifications can be made, I guess it would depend upon sort of that quantity and overall sort of eventual intent. I mean, right, to add a slider door, I understand that because somebody might be doing something internally, but to change out all your windows, let's say, to no longer have arches, but to be just sort of boxed out windows, then I think we would probably not approve something like that.
But the concern I have with that, respectfully, is that would assume or presume that this was a historic structure. And it's not a historic structure, even though it has value. I guess I'm a little confused, because that would then, in a way, hamstring a good deal of the properties in the town of Carefree that might have been built or whose. So if you have a non-conforming grandfathered addition that is there, any change to it would have to be. Okay, but what if that had been originally approved by the town? I think the big differentiator is that the town had originally approved this plan, and Jerry Jones was a well-known person. This was a very prominent project within the town, and so it's not like he was trying to slide it in through the in the dark of night. I'm making those statements because I think that. From the perspective of the owner, I could see that there's almost a punitive, the stance that you're providing is somewhat punitive with regard to their ability to make any changes whatsoever had the fire not happened.
No, Victor, I appreciate that point. I think it all comes down to sort of that magnitude, because I think that you're right. I don't think that somebody should be held to, you know, the exactness if they want to sort of recreate a different space or maybe sort of a, you know, different way how they're going to use the building. I do believe, though, kind of in this circumstance, I think there is a point where you've gone from sort of, you know, sort of some updates, some renovations, maybe some, you know, unique sort of new architectural touches to the building versus in this case, you're looking to basically I understand, I appreciate that you're keeping it in place and the foundations. And so we're really talking about a building that's going to be in the same place, but you're sort of really kind of changing the whole spirit of the home itself and, you know, really what it looks like today. I think at a certain point, as I understand it, you know, remodels become a point where it's not so much remodeling where it's almost a rebuild. And yeah, so at that point, you know, kind of when you cross that line, I think that's when, yeah, the town might have to, you're right, we don't have a historic district, but I think that if, you know, that when you kind of cross that line, it's not so much a remodel anymore. I wouldn't consider what you're proposing to do or what the owners would like to do a remodel.
Okay. Peter, do you have any questions?
Oh, yeah. I guess this is for the architect.
Oh, no, I already did. Yeah.
I think he still had some more, Tom.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think this is for the architect. I thought I heard you say that you're going to leave the lower level, or what exactly is the concept? Are you going to leave all the arches? You're going to leave the slope roof? You're going to leave the tile?
The idea is to keep the columns as they had previously existed in the same structural rhythm on the same footings and the same roof framing, but change the sloped roof to a parapet situation. Yeah.
Okay. Where, just out of interest sake, what do you rely upon, or what are you relying upon in the ordinance that leads you to the conclusion that the non-conforming aspects of the building are attached to the property regardless?
I'm not a legal scholar, and I could not tell you that answer, that specific answer. But I think what we're also talking about is what a reasonable approach to property rights would be, and as a citizen, I think that
okay.
would be reasonable. But no, I do not have a chapter and verse from the ordinance.
Okay, so your assertion that the non-conforming aspects are grandfathered with the property is your opinion. It's, you can't point me to anything to look that up.
I would say that's true as far as I can tell. I would have to defer to a lawyer.
Okay. Did the fire damage or destroy the property?
The fire destroyed the majority of the walls that were not retaining walls. So the retaining walls were able to be intact because they were buffered by the earth behind them and due to the fact that they were concrete. All of the roofs were damaged. There's a small portion of the garage that was not damaged. And there are bits and pieces here and there, but the structurally, the determination was made that we cannot rely on any of the roof framing, and that the only wall framing that we can rely on are the retaining walls against the hill itself. Lower level can retain the pool and the slab, for example. Those were intact fairly well, the walls there.
Is in your mind, or I guess more in legal terms, is there a difference between the words damaged and destroyed? Mr. Chairman, Victor, let me just expand on that a little bit. I'm looking at 1102, and 1102 uses the word damaged. It doesn't use the word damaged or destroyed. It just says damaged. So kind of for my little mind, what if you had a chimney or your cupola or whatever that roof is on the top got struck by lightning and got knocked over, then I think that the language of 1102 is pretty clear that you could add the chimney back even though it would be exceeding existing height limitations. You see where I'm going with that, Victor?
I'm looking at 1102, and I read it earlier. I'll point to Stacy. on that one, but the paragraph is quite clear between ownership. You have to replace a chimney, you have to replace a chimney. But we're talking a heck of a lot more here.
But the code says damaged. It doesn't say destroyed.
So no, that's right.
I think that 1102 might protect a property and all of those non-conforming rights if it's damaged. But if it's destroyed, we're basically dealing with a clean slate, then I'm not sure that all of those non-conforming exemptions carry with it.
Well, if you go below that, the two options, rebuild the structure as it was originally designed and constructed, location, height, or build it, yeah. So then if it's damaged, then you can repair it. The whole problem with this is opening up the whole Pandora's box of non-conforming, and the heights and building something entirely different. And there's an awful lot of non-conforming lots, particularly in the Carefree Plat, the original, what they call Carefree subdivision, and setbacks and everything else. And we just don't want to go there. And this would open it up to make it a wide open wheelbarrow full of whatever people wanted to do.
Excuse me, Chairman Cross and Board Member Burns, why don't we stick to questions? I think you're kind of a little further down the road when you all have the opportunity to discuss everything that you've heard. I think maybe we want to hear a little bit more from some of the other board members. I appreciate what you're all saying, but why don't we kind of stick to the question portion of this, and then you guys can start to kind of have a discussion.
All right, Dan, you're up next.
Hi. I was wondering, is there an HOA that has been involved or have HOA guidelines with regard to this particular structure?
Chairman and Board Member Davey, no. This is part of Carefree 3B, and there's no HOA.
Okay. So it's my understanding that damage occurred to this property, and they have the two options. And is there an option where they can, use the same pad but build something that would conform to the existing rules of the town?
Chairman Cross and Board Member Davey, yes, that's kind of what we're discussing here today. Yes, I think that because you as a Board of Adjustment looks at cases of development relief, like a variance, okay. That is something that you can consider and discuss for sure.
So we're talking about two separate, or in my mind anyhow, two separate things where we could use the same pad, but if something were to be built on that pad, it would need to meet the existing requirements. Is that an option or is that not in the cards?
Chairman Cross, Board Member Davey, no, that is an option. Okay. I mean, so you're right. So really the first part of the discussion was sort of an understanding of my interpretation of the ordinance, and that's sort of where those quote two options came from. But you do have the option or the liberty to determine if there's some of those, if there's something else that you think might be a compromise or something that, because under the Board of Adjustment, you have that right or you have that power to waive certain development standards. So correct. So if you wanted to utilize, if you felt like the granting that relief from the existing building, you know, to remain, but building based on the rest of our development standards, that's something that you all can discuss and determine if you think that's appropriate.
Yes, because looking at the topography of the land, it looks like you're just going to basically damage a great deal more land for, shut this off, hold on, land in trying to move the pad to existing, to conform with existing requirements. And so I think that maybe we should think that, first of all, is that a consideration? Is that something that the board would consider? But then on this pad, they would have to build something that complies with the current requirements. Can we show this to for discussion purposes?
So should we, anybody, I think you should save that for your discussion.
Okay.
I think we should kind of continue to go through the board members if there's any other questions for either Victor or myself.
Ralph, you're up next. Do you have anything, any questions?
Yeah, I got a couple of things. I'm a little confused now with all this conversation because what do they intend to keep and what don't they intend to keep? And we have no idea of what it's going to look like, what they're going to replace it with. So that makes our job a little awkward here. I mean, these red lines are nice, but I don't know what those red lines mean in regards to the actual house. They say they're going to keep the pool and the downstairs. Why are they going to keep it exactly the way it is now? And then how are they going to, inject that into the rest of the house? So is the house going to look, the rebuild, going to look similar to the one that's there now? Or I heard the word contemporary. Is it going to look totally different? And then the pool and the downstairs floor would look out of whack. So I think we're dealing with something which we don't have the answers to make an intelligent decision one way or the other. This is a rebuild or this is going to be a house from scratch. Because they haven't given us an answer what exactly they're going to do or what they're going to keep or what they're going to, transpose onto what's going to be changed.
That's a good point, Board Member Farrow, Chairman Cross. I think we have to remember, we are looking at things more in terms of development standards. But I do agree that if you are, considering some sort of waiver of some of those standards, it might be worth understanding, what the ultimate build out is. I think that would be something that the architect would be best able to answer for you.
Shall I jump in?
Excuse me, Victor, before you go ahead, somebody called in, call in user one. Can you tell us who you are, please?
Actually, it's me because I was getting audio.
Okay, I think you're having...
You have two things going on. You're getting feedback and echo.
Okay, let's try hanging up.
Get reverb, turn the sound off, and then just try the computer.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
All right, great. Thank you, Victor. Sorry. Why don't you go ahead?
Would it be possible to repeat the question just so I'm not going off in the wrong direction?
Right. Ralph, I think you would ask the question.
What exactly are you going to keep? And what are you going to reproduce? I heard you say before it's going to be contemporary. Well, then if the pool stays and the downstairs stay, that's not contemporary. So are you going to renovate that too? Or what? In other words, the red lines really don't give me any indication of what's going to happen there.
Right.
And if you were going to just rebuild the house the way it was, then there'd be no problem with it.
Yeah.
But I hear there is going to be some changes, and we're not really getting any answers, even in the generality form of what
sure.
What's going to happen, what's the changes going to be.
Okay. So I think that there is perhaps a differentiation between the structural existing conditions and then the aesthetic existing conditions. And I would say that we would endeavor to hew very close to the existing structure, even while some of the window openings may change or, for example. So it makes perfect sense to use the existing structure, because of the, there's an efficiency there. The home can be built much more efficiently by using some of the original structural elements. So to answer your question, yes, we are looking at a fairly true structural rebuild, although the windows and roofs, for example, would likely look different. But we haven't done too much on the design because we really wanted your feedback. Two other points maybe I'd like to make, if possible, related to this question. One is that were this to be approved by this board, we of course would work very closely with the town to observe all ordinances and all requirements for the development process. That would be standard and understood. It's simply, I think, the question of whether the massing and footprint would be allowed. So that's the first thing. The second thing, I'm looking at the code. I was asked about the building code or the ordinance. So I'm looking at 11.2, number two. And the language is such that the kind of differentiator is expansion. No expansion shall be made of a non-conforming building unless it conforms to the regulations. I think we were very specific about not expanding beyond the previously built footprint and structure. And that I think would be, if there were stipulations of approval, I would say that one of the stipulations that would make sense to me would be that there was, that no expansion within the non-conforming area would occur, would be a one. And the second would be that...
It's 6 o'clock.
Okay, I'll stop then. I'll let you go ahead.
Oh, no, I don't know what that was.
Okay. So that was the first, that we would not expand beyond. And the other is that we would work closely with the original structure so that it doesn't go spiraling out of control in terms of the building. I think the bones of the building would remain intact. Back to you.
Okay.
Stacey, I got a question. I mean, We have the ordinance, mm-hmm. and big changes on this, and we've got also many non-conforming areas in the original plat of Hereford. But it sounds to me, I don't know, we're not dealing with enough information here. The code is pretty explicit. If it burns, damage, whatnot, you rebuild what was there. Obviously, this is not happening. So it's something totally different on a non-conforming lot, whereupon it can't be done.
Well, Chairman Cross, I think that, I think what the applicant, though, is requesting is, I mean, that is my interpretation, but I think under this particular process, what they're showing us is that they understand that, but they'd like to rebuild based on these two caveats, one being location and one being building mass and height. And so, because I think, and I appreciate what Board Member Farrell was saying, and I think it's important to understand that, and kind of I can see the board member somewhat struggling, trying to know, well, how do I know what to approve if I don't see what I'm really looking to quote approve? But I think we're talking about development standards. I think that development standards of when the house was originally built. And with this unfortunate occurrence, should they have that right to rebuild it that same way again? But at the same time, if you're going to change it dramatically, should these type of development standards translate to any kind of envelope? And I think that's what I know what is my concern. You asked a question, somebody asked a question about precedence. And I think that's what we're kind of here to determine. And so I think we should kind of continue to make sure all the board members have a chance to ask questions and then obviously hear from the public as well.
Well, Lynn, have you been listening to this or did you just come in?
I came in a half an hour late because for some reason I thought this was going to be on Wednesday, the joint meeting with the EDTAP. And I went on my computer and I saw Stacey's email saying, are you coming to the meeting? And I went, and quickly forwarded it to Herbie's computer because mine doesn't do Zoom. But
well, then, I understand it. Then you wouldn't be able to vote then. Is that right, Stacey?
Oh, no. I think she's joined us. I think she's heard enough.
Yeah, I've been here for a while. Okay. I didn't have audio, so I was fiddling around trying to correct the technical issues. But I actually have personal experience with this. When we were building our house back in 1990, it was 90% completed and it burned. And there were some concrete walls left, but they were fried by the fire and all the stuff under the slab was fried. And we had to
demolish what was there other than a few retaining walls. And when it was 90% completed, we got to see some things we would have changed, and we had the opportunity. So,
but you were within the codes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, our house wasn't asking for any variances, but the fact that it burned down and what was left had to be demolished, and we did make some changes. We had to start over with an all new, building permit. I mean, we had to start from scratch with the town too.
Yeah, that's the same time frame.
I'm sorry, what?
That all occurred in the same time frame. You used the same standards that were in existence at that time.
Right, but we did have to start over with a whole, because we did make changes, we had to start over with a whole new building permit.
Okay.
We had to resubmit to the town. We had to get a whole new building permit. We didn't just automatically get a variance to do something different.
Lynn, that's a statement. Okay, we understand them. We're there. Is there any more questions from the board? Well, then how about the public?
Well, Tom, so why don't we, if there's no more questions of any of the board members, what you need to do is open up the public hearing. And Tom, when you do, Chairman Cross, when you do open up the public hearing, we have one letter that Samantha Gazelle, my planning clerk, is going to read first. So will you open the public hearing, Tom?
Yes. Okay. Well, we have to. I think we all received the letter.
Okay, but she's going, Samantha's going to read it into the public record.
All right.
Okay.
Is there any others, Samantha, besides that one?
Nope, just this one. Okay. This letter is from Samuel Schoen, and it reads, I am the owner and full-time resident of 6956 East Stagecoach Pass in Carefree. My home is directly abutting the home on Black Mountain that recently burned down. My understanding is that the owners of the property are having trouble getting support to rebuild with a plan that consists of, number one, less stories than the previous home, number two, a contemporary style that will better match the neighborhood than the heavy classic European style that was there previously and sat on the market unwanted for more than 5 years, number three, using a well-known GC who has built numerous admired projects in the immediate neighborhood as well as for the town itself. It is the good fortune of the town and the neighborhood for that, for the moment, the owner remains motivated and well-funded and has not just simply walked away. As primary justification for past zoning expectations, the planning director told the town council the buildings on this site have been vacant for some time, and it is deteriorating and becoming a nuisance. Certainly, this same logic applies in greater amounts to the burned-out wreckage on the side of Black Mountain. I do not want to see this property return to the bank and sit unsightly for several years. The current owner's proposal is clearly what is best for the site, neighborhood, and town. If the Board of Adjustment chooses not to grant the exception to facilitate redevelopment of the burned site, it will have literally and figuratively created a black mark in the Black Mountain neighborhood that will remain as an indefinite stain for all to see. Please count my wife and me in favor of fully supporting the redevelopment plan submitted by the current owners of 6948 East Stagecoach Pass in Carefree. Sincerely, Samuel J. Schoen.
All right, is there any other questions from the community? I'll make a statement on this.
Tom, before you go ahead, so there's no other members from the public who are looking to speak?
Any other members?
Hi, this is Peter Frisch. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I live on 6902 East Langwood Lane, right there in the corner of Stagecoach. And I guess I would like to say that I am actually happy that the Carmines have decided to rebuild and most importantly live there as the primary residence. I mean, I think that's a really good thing. I'm really happy that it's not going to be a group home, rental, Airbnb. So I'm really happy about that. Or it's not going to be a Hampton Inn or something similar. So I'm just real happy that I support what they're trying to do.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay. Any other members of the community?
Yes. My name is Ed Francis, and my wife and I, Lila, have the residence immediately to the south. We have a adjacent border with the wedding cake, and we're at 6940 East Stagecoach Pass. I fail to understand why the Carmines should be granted a third option. They have one option of rebuilding what they had purchased, and then they also have a second option of building a brand new home, but they only have to, you know, abide by the current standards. So they're not without options. I fail to understand why they are deserving of a third option of development standards that nobody else has been afforded. Our personal situation is my wife, as a young woman just out of school, left Iowa and worked at Desert Forest Golf Club in 1973 and 1974. She really enjoyed the uniqueness of Carefree and purchased the residential lot that's directly adjacent to the wedding cake in 1978, prior to the wedding cake being built in 1982. Her idea was to build her dream home towards her retirement years, which we did. So in 2009 and 2010, we undertook that project. And there were some standards that the city asked us to adhere to that we really would have liked to have something different, quite frankly. However, we never did ask for a variance. We accepted the current standards and limitations, and we proceeded and we built the home, and we have now been in the home some 10 years. So I guess in conclusion, we've owned the property many, many years longer than our neighbors, have not met our neighbors, I'm sorry to say. And we abided by the city standards. And for the life of me, I just don't understand why they should have greater freedoms and liberties with the planning and zoning laws than we had. So maybe somebody can explain to me that. Thank you. We are opposed to the variance. Thank you.
Are there any other members of the community with anything to say? All right. Well, at this point in time, I guess Stacy.
Chairman Cross, I think the owner would like to possibly respond.
Oh.
Yes, thank you. Okay. The problem that we're faced with rebuilding anew, is we basically have to move the house 40 feet down the mountain. And that means destroying the full pads that exist. So we can do this at a huge cost and destroy another 40 feet of the mountain, maybe more once we put the pool in. But to build a house with the setback, the way it's proposed, that's what we'll need to do. We'll disrupt it. And of course, what we leave up above, no one will ever see, but it probably will never be returned to the exact condition that it was before. I mean, ultimately, we can't afford to build the house new down the hill. I can't do that. I don't have the money. And if I have to rebuild the house as it was, that's an unsaleable house. That house sat on the market for approximately 5 years. I mean, originally the house was for sale for $5 million. I bought it for basically the value of the land and put a lot of money in it. But I, you know, if it comes to rebuilding or not rebuilding, I don't have the wherewithal to do this, to move it down the hill. Nothing gonna happen. It's, you know, it's going to sit, or it's going to be sold to somebody who will come in and tear the whole thing down and do it their way. But they'll have to also move it down the mountain for it to be conforming.
Okay. Thank you. Stacy, I got one question regarding that.
Okay. Chairman Cross, why don't we close the public hearing and then I can answer a question and can start to.
I'm sorry. I forgot to ask. Is there any other members of the public or the owners that have comment? Well, I guess we don't have anything then. So let's close the public hearing. Can do that. All right. The public hearing is now closed. And I would have one question for Stacy in terms of nonconformance, particularly the side yard setbacks, If they built a home vertically, whatnot, to satisfy the current requirements, could they still build it in the non area?
Chairman Cross, to answer, I think what you're asking me is if they can, you as the board under this process, under this appeal process, can also, yes, you can grant a waiver to setback standards, if that's what you're, I think is what you're asking.
So it would not have to, the standards would be the vertical, et cetera, and height, but they could in fact build in the non-concurring setbacks.
Chairman Cross, yes. I mean, you all can determine that.
Yeah, you could grant that, yes.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, too.
Okay.
Because it doesn't make sense to have to tear it apart and move it 40 feet down the mountain. That would be destructive to the mountain and exorbitantly expensive.
Right. So under this sort of appeal process, you can also grant sort of the development waivers that you see fit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, is any other... Can we go forward now with any other questions? Are going to move to vote on this?
Well, I think somebody could make a motion, but you make a motion and then there's a discussion and you can continue. And if you don't agree on that motion, then you start again. But this is the time when you all can have that conversation.
Well, make a motion and we end the discussion. All those in favor?
What's the motion?
Correctly?
No time. Yeah, Chairman Cross, I think a motion about how you want to resolve or how you want to move ahead with the case decision.
Well, okay.
You're looking to either.
I thought we were ending discussion. Now we wanted to vote. I was making two different.
That's okay. I think this is your opportunity to discuss with the other board members if you all have questions of whatever each of you are saying, or this is that time, and then you'll look to make a motion to either uphold. Overturn or modify my determination.
Is there any more questions from board members?
Because I joined late, Stacy, could you repeat your determination?
My determination was about the fact that the way that I read the non-conforming language in the zoning ordinance is that you look at the word rebuild. So if you do have damage related to an act of God, that a property owner should have the right to build what they had, and whether that be height, location, but in essence, you're rebuilding, you're not redesigning and building new. Your other option then, if you did want to build something new, you would need to comply with current development standards, and that would pertain to height, location, what we have that in the zoning ordinance that you would comply if your lot was new today. Under this, and I don't mean to be redundant, but under this process, though, because you are the Board of Adjustment, if you feel that there's something about the architect and the owner have relayed that there's certain criteria such as relief from setbacks, if you believe that criteria is valid, if you believe that, height and massing, that's valid, you as the board, almost like kind of a quasi variance hearing at the same time, can grant that along with agreeing or disagreeing or modifying my interpretation.
Okay, just so I understand, we can say that if they can rebuild, but it has to be to the current standards. However, the setback is waived where they can build in the same footprint.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd like to make that motion.
That's not part.
Well, Lynn, Board Member Hitchin, so are you, I think we need I think it needs to be a little more clear.
How would you suggest we word that, where they can rebuild a different house but within the same and the same footprint, and just waive the give a variance for the to waive the setback
for just the setbacks? I think you're looking to make a motion to uphold my determination with the modification of allowing for the existing building pad to remain, but all other development standards must apply.
Bingo.
Does that sound right?
Yeah.
And could I ask a question while we're discussing how to articulate the motion, Chairman?
Yes.
Procedurally, is it possible to do this in a two-step? I heard discussion earlier, which I agreed with, which I'm uncomfortable discussing waivers and modifications without really seeing what it is we're talking about. Is there a way we can, without delaying the homeowner's intentions, we definitely don't want to do that. We know you need a home, but would it be possible, is there something procedurally where we can say we'd like to see, we don't want to slow you down, but we want to see the plans before we agree to modify the, agree to a variance on the setback?
Wouldn't that come before us as the Development Review Board?
Chairman Cross,
please listen to Stacey.
And Member Brigette, I think the only way to do that would be to actually ask them to apply for a variance. I understand what you're saying. And if that is the case, then we would just have to need to kind of think about this. But I think you're upholding my decision. So if they choose not to go for a variance, then they wouldn't have that consideration to rebuild in the same location.
Is one approach preferred versus the other?
Well, I think that I think you all need to determine, again, we're talking kind of about development standards, not so much about architectural aesthetics and style. I think it's about, do you agree with where the building's located? Do you agree with building it the same height and the same massings? I think if you wanted to, if these were kind of separate, I think that really what you're doing is upholding my decision and then telling the applicant that they need to come back and apply for a variance and go through that process in that regard. I think that I think you have enough information, in my opinion, to kind of make your determination altogether. But that is, if you believe that that's a better approach, it's a longer time, it's longer in terms of timing. And I guess the other thing too, that, I'm not sure that's, if the applicant is interested in then following through with that, but I think it makes more sense to do this now. But I understand sort of your perspective.
Stacey, I want to clarify some of this stuff and dancing around here.
Who's speaking?
We can make a motion now based on yours and varying yours by saying they have to rebuild the house on the same foundation. They can make it as high as it is now. But then eventually, don't they have to submit plans of what they're building?
I don't know if I completely understand your question. Correct. They do have to submit for building plans.
Yeah.
I think right now, though, really the question that as I'm hearing it is, do you want to allow for the same height relief that they're currently sort of enjoying, I guess, for lack of better words, versus as well as leaving it in the same location? Or is there some things that you agree with or disagree with? Or as one of the members of the public stated, you know, it's a little clear, it's either build what was there or build something new with today's standards.
Okay, well, as I understand the decision here we have was on, you know, the clause. So we can get that taken care of. Then there's other alternatives here for them to pursue. Right now, it's the simple part of this is that you can't do this unless you want to rebuild the identical thing.
Mm-hmm. Substantially.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But you can come back with, meaning then you can fall into the categories of the existing code and go to ask for the continuation of the variance of the setback and go on from there with the existing codes as far as heights and everything else is concerned. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So if we uphold this, then they in fact can come back again with actually a building permit then. And those they have to do is come to us for a variance on the setback. Is that correct?
Right. So Chairman Cross, I think the idea is that because you have that authority to grant those variances, that you can do that sort of under the umbrella of this particular request. And Board Member Burgett, you're right. We do see more when we go through a variance process. But at the same time, I can appreciate what you're saying, but I think in this case we're talking about relief from height in essence.
Yeah, so if I could just add something. So the real problem is that you only allow homes of two stories. Mm-hmm. And right now that's a three-story house. Mm-hmm. And if we have to come back with a variance, we're basically taking the third story off. We're 4 feet short. That's what's happening.
Chairman Cross, I don't think you're 4 feet off because, we're kind of getting into other sort of standards, but I do believe that, you have to be 24 feet from lowest finished floor to highest roof. And as your building goes, there's points where it's more than 24 feet.
Okay, has everyone got their questions
answered? Story, that's the problem.
Chairman Cross and Mr. Carmine, you're right. I think that you're kind of you're in a pickle because you're right. We don't build homes of three stories in Carefree anymore. And in fact, we don't even really talk about homes anymore in terms of stories. We just really talk about homes in terms of height. You know, you could have a one-story home that has 24-foot ceiling. So I think, again, it goes back to sort of that original, whenever the ordinance changed to really kind of limit height in terms of residential development, the feeling at that time was to have sort of a more streamlined, kind of a lower sort of profile home. And so I think that's what, I think that's what the board's struggling with. That's what we're all sort of struggling with is, we want you to be happy, but you're right. You have a three-story home in a town that only allows, in essence, two stories today.
Two-story. And what we're proposing to do is actually to build a house that is smaller or less tall than the previous home. Mm-hmm. So we're lowering the house from the height of the turret that was there before.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Cross, and yes, Mr. Carmine, I do understand that, but it's still, while it is a reduction, it's still overall, it's still that height that's greater than what we would typically allow today.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Peter.
I'm just a question of procedure here. Since the meeting was noticed as an appeal, can we, in fact, grant a variance when it's only on the agenda as an appeal?
I don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah, Chairman Cross and Board Member Burns, excuse me. Yes, you can, because, I go back to the fact that you're the granting authority for those different of those kinds of actions. And so you're right. I mean, it's under the guise of an appeal, but that appeal can also have an attached request to it. So I do believe it's appropriate, if you so choose, to grant relief at this, because it is a public hearing. This is sort of the same forum that we would hold if it was a variance. I understand. I agree with Board Member Burgett. I mean, we do tend to have a lot more information, but I think with what the applicant and the owner are requesting at this time, I hope you're getting an understanding of, you know, it's really a relief from setbacks and height.
Back in height.
So are we adding something to it? Or are we still just voting on
the Yeah, I mean, you can vote on sort of the, I think what Board Member Hitchin relays is what I had described was, I think, the intent of her motion. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be repeated, please?
Right. I'll try to repeat as closely as I can. Mm-hmm. But I think that the idea is that you are voting to basically, I think, modify. Well, actually, you're upholding the zoning administrator's decision with respect to that interpretation of nonconforming in the zoning ordinance. However, you're granting relief for the rear yard setback and the location of the building.
Okay.
So we're not talking about height then?
No.
Well, that motion doesn't include height.
No, I wasn't including height. I just don't think it makes sense to move it 40 feet down the mountain. I think they should have to conform to all the other standards now that they're rebuilding.
Meaning that you're okay, just so I understand, Chairman Cross, so Board Member Hitchin, so you're all right with them building in the same location, but just not more than the height that we allow today.
Right, I think they should be held to today's standards.
Yes.
When they're basically building a new house.
So that's the case. We can modify the upholding and include that provision.
Right. Do all the board members, is there any more discussion? I just want to make sure all the board members are clear about, and if there's any other questions.
Once again, if everyone will indulge me, because I heard something from Chairman Cross that I wanted to make sure I understood if that modified the motion. Just to hear it again, upholding the decision mm-hmm. with respect to the interpretation of the ordinance, and granting relief from the rear yard setback.
Allowing for that.
Full stop.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Well, I will entertain a motion then to, this one here, we just go around and vote to either uphold, overturn, or modify. And uphold.
We need a second.
Wait a minute.
We need a second to the motion.
Second.
All right. In that case, we just, as I see this one here, rather, we don't have an approve or negative. You're gonna vote to uphold, overturn, or modify.
Chairman Cross, I think you're looking to, we're upholding. I think the motion is you're upholding the interpretation, but you're allowing for your granting relief for the setback. So yeah. I think it's a. I think that might complicate it if we.
No, that's the motion. That's
The motion is to uphold with the provision on the setback.
Yes.
Okay. So if that's the case, I guess we need a second to vote.
Ralph already seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye to uphold. All those opposed?
Aye.
If I see it, then we've upheld the decision with the modification we talked about in terms of setback.
Okay.
Is that agreed?
That's correct. That's the action, correct. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable compromise.
Okay. There's no announcements for the Board of Adjustments, so it's Chairman. I'm sorry. I think the applicant, you have a question.
Thank you. And I respect the process that you went through. I think thanks for the robust discussion, even though perhaps not exactly what we were looking for. But I was curious does that, just for clarification, the overall height then of 24 feet would be the restrictive element in this in this conversation, right?
Correct. I think basically what the decision has been made is that you can build in that same building pad location, but you have to comply with all the rest of the current regulations, including height.
Okay, including height. So, all right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That is exactly what we're looking for. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And likewise, Victor, it was a good conversation.
That's the case. Then, no announcements.
No announcements. No.
Vote to adjourn.
All in favor?
Second. So moved.
Second.
Third. All in favor?
Don't go anywhere. No. Was there a second? I'm sorry.
Yeah, there was a second. Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Negative about it? Okay. Meeting is adjourned.
Okay. So if we want, why don't we take a 5-minute break and then we'll come back for a Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. And of course, members of the public are welcome to stay. We're going to be talking about accessory structures. So let's all take 5 minutes.
Thank
okay?
You.
Okay. Thank you. Bye now.
Now, apparently, there's a P&G meeting after this. I was recording the test. I missed this completely.
Okay, we're recording again. And so this is now Chairman Cross, if you would like to start the Planning and Zoning Commission work session.
All right, this is the Planning and Zoning Work Commission. We can do the Pledge of Allegiance again if you so desire.
Yeah.
Everyone's
I don't
here.
Think you have to. We can if you'd like.
Oh, we don't have to do that.
It's a work session. It's a work session.
Well, work not session. That. I mean, it's still the same flow.
Okay, so it's a work session. Everyone is going to do a double check on who's here.
Okay.
That's the same. All right.
Yeah, correct. All the same
members of the here now. Are here.
All right, take us into all this fun and games, Stacey.
Okay, well, what's interesting about a work session is I'm happy we still have a member of the public who's interested in listening to our discussion. We're really not taking input from the public, but once you've all had a conversation, you're welcome to receive some input if you choose. But what this is really about, and this is, again, it would be nice if we were all kind of together in one room. This is really kind of start to talk about some things in our zoning ordinance that might need to change, and maybe it doesn't need to change, or maybe it just needs to be tweaked in a certain manner. But the building official, Mike Tibbett, and I have been talking about this for a while now. Our zoning ordinance allows for a casita, another living quarter on the property. And it does manage what the size of that casita would look like. This phenomenon that I believe we're seeing, and I think the building official agrees, is that we're almost seeing second homes being built on these parcels. There's properties that are very large, that have large homes, and thereby allowing, the opportunity to have a large casita or guest quarters, mm-hmm. as the zoning ordinance calls it. And so, with that said, and now that we kind of have these new state regulations in place, we have Airbnbs and things like that, which the town doesn't prohibit, but we are looking, the town does only allow for the entire property to be Airbnbs or be rented as an entire property. You're not allowed just to rent out the casita. So I think what's happening is that we're finding that we're almost, like I said, seeing these second homes on the property. It's hard to manage what the use of those living quarters are. We're also seeing just accessory structures in general. People have a casita, they want to build a garage, they want to build a pool house. What is the vision? What was the intent of accessory structures and guest quarters? And I will say that, so I always think it's good to look at other municipalities. And so I did throw a couple of them in there. And I thought a couple of them had some interesting ways that I think are trying to kind of get at some of the things that I believe that we're seeing in town. But that's all. I just wanted to really preface it and just hope that, you know, you had a chance to sort of look through some of those definitions. I'm happy to have the conversation, and maybe everything is okay the way that you see it. It's something that we're finding that while I understand you have a casita and, you know, you add another driveway, and so now you've got two homes, and it might not seem like a big deal when you look at it kind of isolated, but in the big picture, you know, you are contributing to added traffic on our streets, you know, and potentially the sort of just how the enjoyment of a person's home in their neighborhood. So with that said, I'm not going to say anything more. I'm kind of leaving it all to you. And if you see that there's things and definitions that you liked or didn't like or thought could be amended, I'd like to bring that back to you in, as a text amendment in a public hearing forum. So
ask a clarification, Stacy, and you may not be prepared or feel like this is what we're here to do, but I would love to have an understanding of what are we trying to solve for. So is there a problem we're trying to cure, or are we anticipating a situation? Like, what is it we're trying to solve for?
Right, Commissioner Burgett, I like that. I'm definitely on board that. I don't think we need to just tweak with things if it's not broken, don't fix it. Kind of I feel that way too. I think in my mind is that, and maybe I didn't describe it as well when I was sort of prefacing what we're doing tonight, is that I'm finding that we're seeing a lot of casita structures that I think are really becoming almost like second homes on a site. And what that means is in our zoning and on a parcel, it's single family residential. What that means, it's single family for one family. We have casitas, not to say that you can't have family live with you, but again, it's family unit. People have friends and guests that come over. Absolutely, that's what a guest quarters or a casita is for. But in terms of actually having a whole nother family unit that lives there on a regular basis, now we're almost creating multifamily parcels on single family lots. And so while I agree, sometimes it's hard to apply this to carefree because you got a parcel up in the Highlands, it's 10 acres and what's the harm, but it's still philosophically that is the issue. And while it's not a heavy burden that you'll see where in some communities when you start, you know, really densifying neighborhoods, But in theory, that is what it's doing. So it's putting more use on the roads and, you know, impacting. We're not really looking at single family anymore. We're looking at sort of multifamily lots. And so, I Peter and I had a conversation about this a little bit. And it's interesting because I was thinking, oh, in my opinion, I was like, let's get rid of the kitchens. I think the kitchens are what are creating these second homes. But as I started looking at some of these other municipalities, and it's like, are we reaching a little too heavy into people's, you know, rights on their property? But then as I read some of these other municipalities, even Cave Creek, I thought had a really creative way of trying to manage really how to really to have a guest quarters truly be a guest quarters, not be a second home on a single property.
Stacy, how many... do you know how many casitas do we have right now?
Oh, in town? Yeah, that I don't know, but I could definitely, we could do a, you know, we could try to do an inventory of that. But what I can tell you is though, what I've seen lately, I'm looking at casitas that are like 2000 square feet. In my mind, in the idea of a guest home that, you know.
Is there a restriction on the size of the casita related to the size of the main house?
Well, there is, but it's an interesting definition too, because what we say is a casita, the livable area of a casita cannot be more than one third the area, the livable of the main home.
Right. That's what we have in our CC&Rs that we pulled from town code.
Right.
And I think probably a lot of this is because most of Carefree does have homeowners associations. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that just like ours, this is managed in CC&Rs.
Well, Lynn, I think here's the issue is that for you're right. We kind of manage that size, but we don't really say how much non-livable area can be part of that casita. So what I'm seeing, like I've done a couple of them recently where They've got their livable area, and then they have a two-car garage, one of those being an RV parking spot. You know, so, you know, I guess, and maybe in my mind, in the idea of what a casita, maybe that's evolved a little bit, but that really sets up, it really sets up for a whole nother living area that people could live independently of the main home. And I think that's what I'm kind of struggling with a little bit. And also, we say one casita, one living quarters, but we don't say how many accessory structures that are all non-livable, like garages are non-livable space. Mm-hmm. So does that mean somebody can have six buildings on their property? As they comply with lot coverage, that there's one livable, there's the main home, there's a casita, but then four other out structures. I mean, and maybe that's okay. You know, well, but
we have a limitation in our CCNRs that casitas cannot be rented. And that was one of the things that you touched on.
Right, right. And that definitely helps. It's hard to regulate, but it helps. It's harder for us that the ones that aren't in HOAs because, you know, we have the Airbnb phenomenon and or even just a rent.
Right, but we have it where houses can be rented, but all the individual structures on them can't be rented separately. It's like somebody can't rent a house or own a house and rent.
You have to rent the property. You
know, right.
Yeah, and that's in our.
Something like that in our ordinance?
That's in our ordinance. Uh-huh. That's exactly right.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, it might be easier to manage in an HOA. It's hard to manage as a town in terms of enforcing that.
Mm-hmm. There's a good share of Carefree is not an HOA. I mean,
right.
The flat that I live in, Six Gun and Long Rifle, I mean, that was developed, that was the very first flat of Carefree. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of separation. Casitas are separated structures. It's more than 10 foot. You know, I have one when what used to be the carport is now a guest room and an art studio, but we don't rent it. But two doors away over in Sidewinder, there's an Airbnb where they added on, and it's a separate structure, and it's 10 foot away, and it's listed as not, you know, detached living area, and it's being rented by Airbnb. Now, whether it's got a kitchen or not, I don't recall.
Well,
a lot of kitchens can be put in without any building inspection knowing what's going on.
Right.
You know, all you have to do is have the plumbing, and next thing you know, you got the kitchens.
Even restaurants have done that in Carefree. They do it on the weekend and evening.
Right. You know, that's interesting, Tom. I mean, technically, that is a violation, and that's something we can look into. What I thought was interesting was, and I hadn't thought of it until I looked at some of these other municipalities, was about how the electricity and the metering of the water works. You know, if it's my home, and I have my guests, I'm going to pay for their water. I'm going to pay for their electricity. If they're living there and I'm trying to make income from them, I don't know if I'm going to pay for that for them. So I thought that was kind of an interesting criterion. The other thing I thought was interesting, too, was about, you know, not having separate driveways. You know,
right.
You know, having that shared driveway means, well, you know, I'm going to be interacting with that, you know, that.
Well, this one over here in my neighborhood actually has a separate access to the main house.
Mm-hmm.
And I go for my morning walk every other day or every third day, and I look over here, there's a car there. I check to see where the license plates are. And it's not the entrance to the main house.
All right. We'll talk to Dennis about that tomorrow. Are there things that, well, for one, I guess the question is, do you all agree that this is an issue, or maybe it's not an issue to the extent that I've described it? Or have you seen any criterion or that you think might be interested in incorporating into our zoning ordinance, or if you're happy the way it is? The only thing I will tell you, the guest house definition in Carefree should probably be tweaked, if anything. I'm not sure we want to refer to servants, you know, in our zoning ordinance anymore. It's definitely an outdated outdated terminology. Some might consider offensive. So if anything, I think we just need to update, sort of modernize our language. But are there, are there things that you feel do need to change, don't need to change?
I agree with you that if there are two different people that are not family members living, it becomes multifamily, and that's not acceptable on a single family. I mean, I think that's the big sticking point.
Right. I think it takes guests, you know, it's really stretching the limits of what a guest is. I mean, obviously you can have friends come to your home. They might stay with you for a month, but if they're in your sort of living unit, if you're paying for their water and utilities, then it's like, well, then you should have the right to allow guests. Okay. But I think when you start making money off of it, that's
right.
Well, that's the whole premise. What Tom just said about his neighborhood, gee, that seems to go against everything we're talking about, what a casita is supposed to be.
Right.
So I think, if anything, we should do better monitoring of what is, of all the casitas. That's why I asked if you know how many casitas there are in town. Seems
we're
like
trying.
And what are people doing with these casitas?
Yeah, because that's done though, Ralph.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what new casitas, well, we would have some control over that. They'd have to come, you would think, to ask about building it. But there's a lot of casitas in Carefree because a lot of the locks are pretty big and a lot of these houses have. But originally what they were designed was for somebody to come, like said, a friend, a family member or whatever. A mother. That's the premise of a casita. Now, with this RV and whatever the heck you call that stuff, where the people are trying to make a buck off it, well, wait a minute, that's not the concept of what casitas are and what casitas should be in a place like Carefree.
Well, I will say we are trying to manage it. It's not an easy task. I think Samantha and Dennis, along with Carrie too, we're going on the websites of all of the booking agencies and trying to fit, because a lot of times they don't tell you exactly where they are until you book them. Mm-hmm. But we've done actually a pretty good job at kind of tracking down a number of them because we have, if you remember, we now have you, we require you to, have a business license, and we require you to provide us with an application of information so we know who to contact if there's nuisance problems. Right. And they do know it's supposed to be the entire property, but it's hard to manage. But, you know, again, if we find out, then we'll try to do what we can do.
I have an interesting little add-in for all this. How many of you are aware that detached living areas are not taxed in the state of Arizona?
Oh, really?
There is not a property tax on what is classified as detached living areas.
Interesting. Although we don't have a property tax, but yeah, it's some in the event we did one day, then
we don't. But we get a kind of a share back one way or another on sharing stuff. But yeah, there is not a property tax.
You mean like a county property tax?
Yeah, maybe. Right.
But they're not taxed.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got the Airbnb. Now you can find those places just looking at an Airbnb, right? So I mean, if you look at Airbnb, you should be able to find a place that they're renting on Sidewinder.
You can try. Let's see what the issue is. And
do they have a license agreement in Carefree?
Well, you have to apply for a business license. But you also have to, it's not really a registration, but you have to submit information to us so that if there's a nuisance, we have contact information. And so it's like a registration, but there's no fee. And we've been able to track down many who've been operating without sort of even contacting the state and getting that, you know, that income that is, you know, owed to us. So, you know, it's a process and it's, you know, but we're kind of managing, we're making our way through there.
It looks to me like one of those things we're just going to have to float as the times change and be capable of floating if any changes at all, at least getting some money out of it, if nothing else, mm-hmm. for the town.
As long as it's for the entire property, right?
We don't want to turn into Sedona.
Probably not.
No.
We want to stay Carefree.
Yeah, because Sedona's got problems, I feel like crazy.
So Heather?
Yeah. Yes, a question about limiting how this problem. Are we prepared to say that we wouldn't want kitchens in a casita?
No.
go ahead, Peter.
No, I if you have your mother-in-law or your mother come stay with you, she may want to fix breakfast every morning.
Right. Because a lot of those places have been used for in-laws. I know that's what Bill and Sandy Rimmelman did with her mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say after I saw some of the other, some of the other language and some of the other municipalities, I thought there were some other creative ways to maybe address this. And you're right, Peter, not suddenly, you know, change or limit somebody's use of their property in that way.
Okay, so I agree with that. So let's, you know, take that off the table. Then when we look at Cave Creek's initial opening paragraph there, where they say not used as living quarters, customarily incidental to and located on the same parcel.
7 o'clock.
The building. I think that language helps to begin to ring fence some of the multi-use.
Well, I think what that does is it starts to talk about limiting how many little buildings can be on a parcel.
And not used as living quarters.
Not used as using living quarters. And then it's the next one that starts talking about, yeah, once you're living on there. I kind of like, but I mean, they did, but they don't really, it doesn't sound like they limit the number either. And maybe that's not a problem either, because it's not going to be occupied space. But it, you know, has the potential to be occupied if somebody wanted to go in without a building permit and make it a livable space. But yeah, possibly limiting the number of just total buildings on the property might be something to consider.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't think
you should limit anything that people want to do on their property.
Okay.
At all. You may want to limit the number of meters that they would have for water, the number of electrical service that they may have. But, you know, to say that somebody can't have a gazebo, and that would be a structure, or somebody can't have a building to store equipment in,
right,
or something that they do for a hobby, you're going to why people may have bought a structure or property to start with.
That's
and,
true. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're an artist, you want to have some place to paint or sculpture, you know, kind of thing. Are we going to limit them, you know, because they can't have a toilet in there or running water or lights or whatever it is? I don't think we want to do that.
No, I agree with Dan.
Well, no, we're talking about kitchens, not toilets.
Yeah, but that's not being rented out by tourists.
No. Yeah, you know, if you want to make it like a hotel room, that would be fine. You know, you don't have a kitchen in the hotel room.
And lot coverage, you know, just to throw this in there, lot coverage will eventually tap out how much
right.
you can have under a roof.
Right.
So, but okay.
So our discussion tonight is that whether we need to do some radical changes or live with what? What was the objective or just?
Yeah, I'm trying to get your feel on how to. Well, first of all, if you do agree that we should, you know, look at this and amend some of the language, I'll definitely work on that. But I'm also kind of hearing, you know, not stepping on private property owners' toes too much, but possibly trying to rein in this approach of, well, let's allow sort of what the intended use for family and friends and maybe sort of manage, you know, with meters and things like that.
Separate driveways prohibited. I think that is.
You like that one too. Yeah, I think I like that one too.
I think those all go to making it a unit, you know, as opposed to separation of
right.
Of utilities. So I think that all makes sense. Okay. As far as a casita goes.
Okay. And then I'm hearing that you're fine with how many structures could be on site. I don't know if you all feel that way, but we've got lot coverage and other things that might kind of limit
right.
what happens. So okay. Yeah. So it's kind of more the language related to guest quarters is what I'm hearing you kind of want to see modified a little bit.
I think
you
so.
Figure out how to enforce it.
Well, at least I agree with Dan and, you know, the idea of, I don't think somebody who wants to rent out their places are going to, and want to rent them out long-term and kind of get into this, you know, double family on a single lot are going to want to pay for utilities. So I think that kind of,
yeah,
you know, people get around things all the time, but I think, you know, we kind of see, obviously we've got an intent, I think, of what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. It hasn't really become a real problem in Carefree yet, though, has it? Or whatever a problem will be?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, like I said, it's just been the last couple of years. Probably need to go look back at some of these ones that we, you know, that we were required to approve because they met all the other zoning requirements. Again, I just did one. I just approved a building permit with Mike Tibbett and Greg Crossman. And I think that the casita was 2,400 square feet and it had an RV garage. So, but they lived on a very large property and had a very large home.
Yeah.
So
the other thing you may want to consider is that, you know, in RHOA, for instance, you're not allowed to park your cars outside. So if you had an extended family staying there, you'd have to figure out what to do with those vehicles.
Yeah, you do have to park on, you can't park on the street in Carefree, and I think you have to be garaged also.
But you're going to have a driveway full of cars if you have a garage.
Right.
You can't park there overnight in our HOA.
Right.
No, I'm talking about the town in Carefree.
That's the same.
We've had that problem in a couple of places just around me over the years. So, the code is, that's what I found out, if you got a garage and you have excess cars, then nothing you can do about it. We got one right around the corner from me that's had four cars sitting in it. Three of them haven't moved in 3 years.
That's a problem.
Well, Tom, we can take that up with Dennis tomorrow also.
Well, when Kevin was still around, we took a jump run at it, and they weren't registered, up-to-date registration, car registration. Mm-hmm. So we had something go on there, and they had a flat tire. Well, they did make the update to registration, fix the flat tire, and they still parked and haven't moved through. Right.
Well, we do our best. It's, you know, yes, it's not a perfect world, and there are some just repeat offenders, and that's, and we'll have to sort of manage it on a case by case basis. But I think if we try to kind of maybe try to manage it a little bit from, you know, within our zoning ordinance, you know, as best we can, at least it's a start. So I think I've got some good guidance. Is there anything else that anybody wanted to add?
Oh, because my dinner's getting ready.
Okay.
Just a point, small but important. Yeah. Since we're going to open up the language and make proposed modifications, can we take the word servant out of the Carefree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that is very good. You get a double atta girl for that one.
Yeah.
Remember.
Yeah, we'll do that. Right.
Remember, you're my servant, aren't you?
Peter, did you have something you wanted to add?
You say that the code currently says that multiple families or households cannot live on the same lot.
I don't think it really addresses it. It doesn't talk as much about it as I think it could. It basically, single family talks about having a family unit.
I think you can take out grandma and grandpa.
Well, I think that's part of your family unit. I think it's more of people
in your tribe.
Your tribe. Well, I think I'll have to go back and look a little more closely, but I think we might have to look at the language a little bit about what family unit is, and maybe kind of craft, you know, some of that language as well.
And what we're trying to, I'm sorry, I go back to the first question that was
asked. Okay.
What is the problem that we're trying to solve?
Well, I think the problem we're trying to solve is that we're trying not to create individual independent living units, multiple ones on a single parcel.
And
single family home, single family zoning.
It's related to our zoning.
And I guess I would be interested in knowing what the existing code says on that topic.
Well, basically what it says is our zoning map and our zoning districts talk about single family residential. That means single family, one family on a parcel.
Right.
But now we're kind of with sort of, I think people see opportunities to have, particularly people that have larger parcels, to put sort of that second independent unit on a parcel that's only supposed to have one family unit on it.
And using it as an income property.
Become an income property. We're not saying that, and I think people have expressed, and rightly so, I mean, just I think you said it, Peter, we have mothers and fathers, and, you know, there's some reasons to have people living on your property, but that's your family unit again, versus becoming an income property, then in essence becoming like a second parcel within a main parcel. It's supposed to be a single family unit living on a single family zoning lot.
And that's not otherwise prohibited?
Well, I think the thing is it's been harder and harder to manage because we're seeing what I think the intent was originally was to have sort of a living quarters, small, you know, whether it was for, you know, staff that worked at the home or not. But again, I think it was for people that had access to the main home. I think what's happening is what's being developed are these single units that are in essence not having access to that main home and utilizing those you know, amenities
vacation rentals. That's what.
Yeah, well, it's becoming kind of an independent unit. Whereas normally, if your guests or your parents live with you, they would visit, they would spend time, they would utilize the amenities that you have at your home.
I know that Heather said take out the word servants, but there are people who may want to stay in their home that have people that care for them, and that's not part of the family. So,
right. Well, I think we can find a better word. Maybe it's caretakers. Maybe it's staff. You know, maybe it's just. I just think. I think we want to find the same word, but just a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to unintentionally make it where if people have 24/7 caregivers, they can't.
Right. Right. No, I agree. No, I think we're just looking for something a little more palatable.
Yeah, they're probably not calling them servants.
I just call Herbie servant.
So is there anything else I should know? Or do you want to see if there's any questions from the public? Or is there anybody?
Any questions from the public or any input?
No, I don't have any questions. I found that a really interesting topic, actually.
Okay, thank you. So I think I have good direction. You're welcome to email me or we can discuss it further individually, but I'll try to prepare something in an upcoming, you know, public hearing, and we'll try to sort of, we'll fix the ordinance a little bit here.
All right.
Good luck.
Well, I think we have a good understanding.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Income properties.
Motion to adjourn.
Tom, I think Peter wanted to say one more thing.
Sorry.
There was a mention, I think, when somebody's logged on that they thought that the working session was on Wednesday. Isn't the working session on Thursday?
No. Okay. So this is a Planning and Zoning Commission work session. So
the one with economic development.
Right.
No, I was thinking it was this Wednesday. I was thinking all of this was this Wednesday and hadn't looked at my packet because I thought it was Wednesday. I was going to look at my packet tomorrow. So my bad.
Well, first of all, it's Thursday the 20th. Is that right, Stacey?
Right. So okay. Peter, that meeting is Thursday the 20th. And in fact, I'm going to send out some information a little bit more about it later this week. So,
okay.
Lane, you make sure you put it in your calendar.
I haven't looked at my packet because I had it in my head that it was Wednesday.
Yeah, no problem.
I had looked at my packet, I would have seen it because I did pick up my packet last week.
Right. So, yeah, this was a work session about our zoning ordinance. And so is that clear, Peter?
Yes, okay. I'm good.
Okay.
Excellent. Anyone else? Good.
No announcements again. This is a long one for us. This is good.
Yeah. Gracious.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
All right. Good night.
I'm sorry. Who said? I think Heather said that. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't. Heather, you had something else to say?
No. I'm agreeing with the motion.
You're seconding it. Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Everyone. Thank you. You did great. Good evening, thank you. Folks. Very good job. That wasn't easy.
Oh, dear.
I know.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.